those that aren't here, that the Lord would be with them. I'd like to turn to Psalm 46. Again, the Psalms are so designed by God that it's very easy to make application to ourselves, to our circumstances, wherever we might find ourselves. This particular psalm we've preached from many times. And we'll read the entire psalm. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore, will not though the earth be removed, and though the mountains be carried into the midst of the sea, though the waters thereof roar and be troubled, though the mountains shake with the swelling thereof, Selah. There is a river, the streams whereof shall make glad the city of God, the holy place of the tabernacles of the Most High. God is in the midst of her. She shall not be moved. God shall help her, and that right early. The heathen raged, the kingdoms were moved. He uttered his voice, the earth melted. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge, Selah. Come, behold the works of the Lord, what desolations he hath made in the earth. He maketh wars to cease unto the end of the earth. He breaketh the bow and cutteth the spear in asunder. He burneth the chariot in the fire. Be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the heathen. I will be exalted in the earth. The Lord of hosts is with us. God of Jacob is our refuge, Selah. Again, the keynote, the fundamental and central fact, the main idea of this 46th psalm is struck in the very first two words. God is. That's the theme. God is. And this, of course, is developed and enlarged upon throughout the 46th psalm. You'll notice that the psalm begins with God. The psalm ends with God. The emphasis and the focus in between the beginning and the end is God. It is a song of God. It is a song to God. It is a song to praise God. It is a song of worship, adoration, and reverence of God. It's a song of faith. It's a song of absolutes, a song of confidence and assurance in God. God is. And then in verse 5, we see those two words again. God is. And in verses 7 and 11, we read, the Lord of hosts is, and the God of Jacob is. And in this context that of God is, we see in verses 2 and 3, four times we have the word though. So it is God is though. In other words, regardless, God is. And that's our subject. Regardless, God is. Doesn't matter what else might be going on. Regardless, God is. It is a thought that ought to provide us with a deep personal assurance. It is a thought that ought to greatly comfort us. It is a thought that ought to give us strength, give us security, give us peace. There's much refreshment in that thought. God is, though. There's encouragement. There's conviction. There's courage. It ought to provide us with some energy of soul. God is, though. Such a thought ought to embolden us. Such a thought ought to strengthen our faith and our resolve for the Lord. So the psalm is one of great encouragement. Three times, verse 3, verse 7, verse 11, there's the word Selah. There's the word Selah. A musical pause, of course. But for the reader, it's a place to stop, to give thought, to meditate upon what is said. And oh, that we would pause and give thought to the majesty of the Lord. Give thought to the fact that God is. It would do us great good to pause and give thought when we read God's Word. Again, it's not a race to see how quickly you can get through. The idea of reading God's Word is to feed. And it's very important that we stop. Especially in our day, we need to stop and just give thought to who God is. So consider, first of all, again, the context is, the main idea is, God is. So consider the setting of that thought. We do not know the specific occasion or time or place of this psalm. We do not know the specific circumstances. But from the words that are used, a picture of the setting is painted. For example, in verse 1, God is referred to present tense, has a refuge, which of course is indicative of a storm, some kind of danger, some kind of need. And again, it's present tense. He is also referred to as strength, present tense, indicative of present weakness, present inability. He is also referred to as a very present help, suggestive of urgent need. And then we see in verse 1, there is the word trouble, suggestive. Again, this is all present tense, suggestive of pressures, some sort of distress, unrest, problems, difficulties, inconveniences, trials, heartaches, griefs, sufferings. I mean, the list goes on and on that you could put under trouble. But it's also in trouble, a very present help in trouble. It's not just a very present help at the time of trouble, it is a present help in trouble, conveying the idea that they are surrounded and fenced in by this trouble. Again, the specifics of the trouble are not mentioned, but the list is long. The duration of the trouble is not listed, and it can vary in degree, it can vary in duration. In verse 2, there's the resolve of the psalmist, therefore will not we fear, suggesting that it was a time of fear. In verses 2 and 3, there is a picture of the severity of the trouble. And I don't believe verses 2 and 3 are literal. I don't believe the mountains were literally falling into the sea. But I do believe it just expressing the severity of the trouble. And our attention in verses 2 and 3 is drawn to three images from the world. There's the earth, there's the mountains, and there's the sea. And he says, though the earth be removed, though the earth be removed. That's pretty serious. And then he goes on and says, and though the mountains be carried into the midst of the sea. Mountains. You think of a mountain, you think of something that is very firm. Think of something that is very solid, something that's very, very stable. But we see in this case, it's brought to ruin. So the idea is that that which we consider stable is toppling. And then he goes on and he says, though the waters thereof, that is of the sea, roar and be troubled, again, agitated, and though the mountains shake, though the mountains, again, that which is solid, that which is firm, though the mountains begin to vibrate, and though they begin to totter, and they're brought into a state of instability. So all of this is a picture of great upheaval. It's a picture of great disturbance, conveying the idea of disruption, turbulence, and pandemonium, and chaos, and it's all sudden. It's a sudden change. And this, of course, anytime something like that happens, it's very unsettling. But you read verses 2 and 3 and you get this picture of everything is spinning out of control. I mean, when the mountains are just falling into the sea, there's nothing you can do to stop that. Everything is spinning out of control. Everything is falling apart. And that's the setting of the context God is. And then we come to verse 5. He's speaking of Jerusalem, and there are the words, she shall not be moved. Indicative, of course, of a present threat. There was the threat that she would be, but she shall not be. In verse 6, we read, the heathen raged. Speaking of their agitation, speaking of their fury and their wrath and their resentment of the toward the godly. And then we see the kingdoms were moved, conveying the idea of violence, conveying the idea of overthrow. In verse 9, there's the word wars, battles and struggles. And there's the spear and the chariot. Emblems, of course, of enemy power and force. And in verse 10, again, we read of the heathen. And we also read God saying, I will be exalted, suggesting that he was being discredited and dishonored at the time. So from all of this, we see the setting of the psalm. And the setting is one of crisis. The setting is one of disaster. The setting is one of calamity. The setting is dire straits. And it's all present tense. So, from the setting of the psalm, there are many parallels that can be drawn to the wickedness and the vileness and the abomination and the blasphemy and the heresy and perversion of our day. Many, many, many parallels. Considering the setting of the psalm, certainly there is application to the present situation in the world. We are presently in what is called a pandemic. A pandemic is declared when a new disease or illness, which people do not have immunities to, and that disease or illness spreads beyond expectations. So that's a pandemic. And a pandemic, of course, calls for carefulness. A pandemic calls for responsibility. But the danger of in a pandemic, not only is the illness or the disease, but the epidemic of fear and panic and mass hysteria and anxiety. And all of those things lead to irrational behavior, which of course only worsens the situation. The danger worse than the virus itself is that the situation, the pandemic, becomes the focus and the theme of our life. Because that's never to be the case, whatever the situation is. So you read this 46th Psalm, considering its setting, the emphasis is not the setting. The emphasis is not the setting. The setting or the circumstances is not what identifies who the psalmist is. The circumstances is not what determines his life. It's not what determines his focus. The emphasis of the psalm is God. The focus, the theme, is the Lord. That must always be so of us. No matter what else is going on, God must be our focus. Whether it's just the overall ungodliness of the world, that's not our focus. Our focus is to be God. Whether it be some virus, and again, we're not saying you ignore and are oblivious to these things, but there's a difference between ignoring and being oblivious and focusing upon something and it becoming the emphasis of our life. God is always to be the emphasis. And we see that throughout this psalm, that the theme and the subject and the focus of the psalm is God is the overwhelming factor of the psalm is not the crisis, is not the chaos at hand, but the overwhelming factor is God is. That's the overwhelming factor. The emphasis and focus of the psalm in a setting of crisis, in a setting of calamity, in a setting of dire straits is God is. But you read in verses 2 and 3 is scary stuff. I mean, when the earth starts to shake, when the earth starts to be removed and the mountains start falling in the sea, that's scary stuff. But that's not the emphasis. The emphasis is not the scary stuff. In fact, he draws our attention away from the scary stuff to God is. Again, the earth starts moving. The mountains start falling into the sea. You're going to notice that. You're going to have a concern. You can't ignore that. But it's not the emphasis. The emphasis is God is. So we see the focus of the psalm is God. 19 references made to God in this psalm, if you count pronouns that refer to God. So all through the psalm, 19 times, the psalmist is directing our attention away from the catastrophic happenings throughout the psalm to the absoluteness of God. Verses 1 and 5, again, God is. The Lord of hosts is. The God of Jacob is. In verses 7 and 11. 6 times in the psalm it is emphatically declared, God is. And then if you take the 4 times the word though is used, it is God is regardless. Whatever the situation is, that's not the focus. God is. And what we learn from verses 2 and 3 is that the earth can be removed. The mountains can be carried into the sea. In other words, that which appears to be most stable in this world, that which is most stable in your life outside of God, can be shaken and destroyed. And during our lifetime, we all experience some of those things, where that which is the most dependable in our life, I'm talking outside of God, that which is the most secure in our life is shaken. And that's what we see here in this psalm. And we're aware that those things can be shaken, but when they are, God is. God is. The fact, the evident, the existence, the reality, the certainty of God is never threatened. Never. I mean, you consider where we find ourselves today in this pandemic, and you start thinking about all the things that really are being threatened right now. There's a lot. And I could make a long list. I don't want to depress anyone. And I'm sure you've already thought of them. But no matter, regardless of all of those things, God is not threatened. The existence of God is not threatened. God is. That is an exhaustive statement. That is an all-inclusive statement. That is a statement without any bounds, without any limits. God is. And again, that's the emphasis. That's the focus of the psalm. So, we see also in this psalm that God is active. God not only is, God is active. Notice verse 5. God shall. God shall do whatever he pleases. God shall. Verse 6, he uttered his voice. In verse 8, we read of the works of the Lord. Also in verse 8, we read the words, he hath. He hath. Verse 9, he maketh, he breaketh, and cutteth, he burneth. And then in verse 10, he says, I will be. I will be. So throughout the psalm, God is working. Always is. Always is. He's working in the past, the present, and the future. The reason we bring that up, because that teaches us that God is no distant or indifferent spectator. He's not a God with his hands tied by the whims of the puny will and devices of man. He's not a spectator. He's not a reactionary God. He's working all things after the counsel of his own will. We see also that this God is relevant to our lives. This is manifested by the use of personal pronouns in relation and connection to God. Notice verse 1, verse 7, verse 11, you have the word our. Our. God is our refuge, our strength. There's a connection between us and God. We read in verse 2 of we. Verse 5, her and she. And again, verses 7 and 11, we see us. So all through the psalm, we see he's what we need. That's always so. Whether it be good times or bad times, God is always what we need. Always. Whether we realize it or not, God is what we need. God is what we need. We may find ourselves in a position where we might pray, Lord, I really need you now. Well, the truth is, you always do. But sometimes we realize it more than at other times. We see that this God who is the Most High. In verse 5, he's the Lord of hosts. In verse 7 and 11, and the God of Jacob. And he's our refuge. He's our refuge. He's our place of protection. He's our place of hiding, safety, and supply. He's our strength. In other words, he's our power and our stamina. He's our help. He's our support, our relief. He's our deliverance. He's our provision. He's our enablement. He is our help. So God is what he is. And what he is applies to me. What he is applies to you. He's relevant to our lives. If there's even one single area in our life that God is not relevant, you are in big trouble. God is relevant to our lives. God's not just a point of theology. I believe our theology needs to be sound concerning the person of God. But if that's all you have, is sound theology on who God is, you don't have much. That's not going to get you through verses 2 and 3. God has to be relevant. You have to recognize him as relevant to your life. We also see here that God is present. Verse 1, God is. God is very present. Not just present, but very present. And he's very present as our refuge. That means he must be present in the storm. He's very present as our strength. In fact, he's so present that his presence is more real and more powerful than the disruption, than the pandemonium and the chaos and the change that we read of in verses 2 and 3. We see in verse 5 that God, the one who is our refuge, the one who is our strength, the one who is our help, is the Most High, and he's in the midst. He's in the midst. And in verse 7 and verse 11, the Lord of hosts is with us. Our refuge, our strength, our help. There. Wherever you and I are, our God, there. God is there as our refuge, our strength, and our help. He's there. Wherever you are, there is God. You can't go anywhere and not God be there. He's there. He's always present. He's everywhere present at the same time. You and I can be in entirely different locations, but God is there. And he's there at the same time. It's amazing. So wherever we are, there's God. And he's there as who he is. And he's there as our refuge. He's there as our strength. He's there as our help. He's there. That's very encouraging. The presence of God. So in this psalm, the focus, the emphasis, the theme is not the scary and chaotic stuff that we read of in verse 2 and 3. But it's God is. God is. And the psalmist's identity and direction in life is determined by this. God is. God is. And what the psalmist talks about God, And the psalm consists of 11 verses. And in 10 of those verses, he's talking about God. And he does so in a tone of joy. He does so in a tone of praise and certainty and confidence and great calm. And as we've preached before, but in verse 10, God speaks. God speaks. And I believe most folks do not recognize the shift that takes place in verse 10. The psalmist is no longer talking about God, but God is talking. And if we miss that, we miss a lot. God speaks. Again, the setting is storm, danger, need, weakness, inability, fear, disruption, pandemonium, chaos, sudden change. Everything's falling apart. Everything's spinning out of control. There's nothing you can do to stop it. And in verse 10, there comes the voice of God. Verse 10, I am God. I am God. That is an affirmation of everything said of him in this psalm. That is God affirming everything said of him in this psalm. God says, I am God. That is a call to take notice of God. Take notice. I am God. Because it is our tendency to become unmindful and oblivious of God. Our human tendency is to ignore God. Our human tendency is to get so busy, so caught up, so distracted and entangled with the affairs of life that we become blind to God, that we become deaf to God. But God, in His mercy and in His goodness, directs our attention to Himself. At times, we may find ourselves surrounded by the happenings of verses 2 and 3. And during that time, we need to hear God speak. We need to hear God's voice. And we need to hear this message, I am God. I am God. God speaks, causing us to take notice of Him. So what's that tell us? Again, for 9 verses, the psalmist has been talking about God. God interrupts in verse 10. And basically he's saying is, take notice of me. You realize that you and I can talk of God and really at the same time not take notice of God? I am God. God is getting his attention. We can talk about God and God not have our attention. Just because we talk about God does not mean that God has our personal attention. So God interrupts and he says, I am God. What he's saying is when God speaks, he is saying, pay attention. He's calling for our attention. So we need to ask ourselves, does God have our attention? Now, God can get our attention in innumerable ways, but he can get it. You may be oblivious to God. You may be hardened to God, but like that, God can get your attention. And here he just says, I am God. Whoever you are, whatever your circumstance, whatever your time, your place, your station in life, whatever your circumstances in life, does God have your attention? Does God have your personal attention? I am God. I am God. We need to hear those words. Sometimes God whispers, I am God. And how comforting that is. Sometimes he declares with a reverberating voice, I am God. Either way, whether it be a whisper or whether it be with reverberating voice, we need to hear those words. I am God. And every time God says, I am God, it's a reminder to you and I, we're not. We're not. And we'll all say, well, we know that. We know we're not God. That's true. We do, but sometimes we don't act that way. Think we can fix everything. And God stops us and says, I'm God. I'm God. You stand aside. I am God. So we need to hear God say, I am God. We need to know that. I am God. We need to know it in such a way that it stirs us, that it inspires us. I am God. That's always true. In light of the declaration, I am God. There's instruction. Be still. Be still. Which is a call to be calm. Settle down. Be calm. Be still. It's a call to calm confidence. But is it not also a call to cease and discontinue our own ways? Be still and know that I am God. Be still. The reason? I am God. You don't need any other reason. Be still. I am God. It's a call to take our proper place before God. We need to always take our proper, we need to stay in our proper place. It's called to glorify God. I am God. Therefore, I'm to glorify Him. It's a call to show forth God, to be holy, to walk with God, to serve God, to please God, to stand for God. But he goes on, he says, be still and know that. Something very specific. I am God. Be still, and this is what you need to know. I am God. That's what we need to know. I am God. I am God. God is saying, recognize and be aware that I am God. You might be living in verses 2 and 3, but recognize and aware, be aware that I am God. He is saying, be confident. Be persuaded, be certain, be absolutely assured. I am God. You might be living in verses 2 and 3, but be certain. Be still and know that I am God. It is a call to an acute awareness of who God is. I am God.
Be still and know that I am God. That's a call to faith. That's a call to believe. Believe what? I am God. I am God. Really, that's all we have to believe. I am God. I am who I say I am. Believe that. Believe that. I am God. Be still and know that I am God. Know that I am God. That needs to pierce through everything. That needs to reach into our hearts. I am God. I am God. It's always so. It's never threatened. I am God. And to know that enables us to lean upon Him. It enables us to, it ought to encourage us to seek Him. I mean, if we really know that He's God, we seek Him. We look to Him. We come to Him. We cleave to Him. We embrace Him. We draw from Him. We cast all upon Him. And we rest in Him. It ought to fill us with a God-honoring resolve. I am God. I'm glad that God interrupts our lives to just remind us, I'm God. I'm God. What we read in verse 10 is really the climax of the psalm. You've gone from the psalmist speaking to God speaking. That's the climax. But also, it's God's instruction. It's God's exhortation of the entire psalm. I'm God. It's God's application of the entire psalm. I am God. So in closing, from all of this, we see that God is. He is the Most High. He is the Lord of hosts. He is the God of Jacob. And as God, He is active. He is relative to our lives and our situations and our circumstances. And He's present. He's present with us. So remember this. God is. Whatever is going on, God is. Whatever may be, God is. God is. I can think of a lot of things that may be. They may never be, but in my mind they may be. But whatever may be, God is. And whatever will be. And God's the only one who knows what will be. We know what may be, but He knows what will be. But whatever is, whatever may be, and whatever will be, God is. There's great encouragement in that fact. God is. No matter what. Regardless. Put whatever you want on the other side of though, there in verses 2 and 3. God is. He is everything. That's true. No matter what our circumstances, it's true no matter how we feel. I was out yesterday driving around and I got depressed. I was, man, everything's closed. Nobody on the roads, which is kind of a good thing, but it's depressing. But God is. God is who He is. And that'll be so tomorrow. That'll be so throughout all eternity. God is. Let's stand, Brother Larry, if you'd come and just lead us in a verse of song. And